on the road. Lindsay Reynolds. No wonder I was looking blank there. Sorry. Federated Farmers.
Thank you. I'll get some things to distribute. Thank you. Sure. It is a submission rather than expert evidence. Most of it.
Start. Indeed. That's what my next comment would have been if it hadn't been.
I do. Some of it steps out further from the initial submission by Federated Farmers, and I won't be discussing that now. I'll be stepping past that, so I won't be reading out 16 pages to you, sir.
I'm glad I'm relieved to hear that too.
Yep, I'm sure everyone else is too.
So, please proceed. I don't think you need to describe who you are. If it's a submission, then we're agnostic as to where it's coming from and who the author is, but we're interested in the substance of what you're telling us.
Sure, thank you, sir. So look, I've been asked by Federated Farmers to expand on the submission for the Chapter 39 and reflect on some of the concerns of our Queenstown Lakes members. So as you've asked, I'll step through that introduction, but we'll note I am a planner. I'm not offering any expert evidence, and this is solely because everything I've referred to here has pretty much been drawn from farmers or people who live in Wahitapuna landscapes. Before I start, sir, I just want to make a couple of corrections, if I could.
Certainly.
On paragraph 16, the third last line says activated. It should read activities. And paragraph 19, where it says today, should be split into two words, being today.
Where is that, please?
Paragraph 19.
Yes, but where in the paragraph?
The fourth bottom line, first word.
Oh, yeah. Day to day. Yep, gotcha.
So I've set out a bit of my experience and qualifications there. I am a planner. I have worked in various councils, Federated Farmers. I'm now planning manager for a place called Tiramark in Dunedin. Also the chairman for the Guardians of Lakes, Manapouri and Te Anau Manawai. And just for the purpose of clarity, I did draft the submission for Federated Farmers that was submitted to you last year. And I'd just like to draw to your attention paragraph 8 in terms of my whakapapa relating to the Awarua Runaka. My family maintained a strong relationship with Stewart Island Bluff and Waituna Lagoon. And I'm also a licensed Ngāi Tahu Pounamu artisan. So I do have an active interest in mana whenua in the area. So look, I'll start at paragraph 16 if I can, sir.
Certainly, thank you.
So I support the inclusion of the Wahitapuna provisions in the district plan and see that there is some benefit in having them. I do remain unconvinced that there's any benefit in them being contained as a separate chapter. It was interesting to see the evidence of Mr. Giddens, and you know, from the feedback I've heard from Federated Farmers members, they have pretty much relayed what Mr. Giddens has passed on to you. Weaving the provisions into each chapter allows a more refined case-by-case assessment to determine whether they're relevant to the activity, and that provides scope for activities to be captured by the consenting process or discounted based on compliance with the performance standards. Federated Farmers members that I've spoken to, they do agree that the sites should be identified and protected to preserve the importance of the cultural values and the landscapes. And we certainly support a more targeted approach to the issues. So paragraph 19, given the scale of the Wahitapuna overlays, that's the key concern that they've raised, and it's the members' view that they're too expensive and will result in it not being workable from a practical perspective. The overlay extends over many established farms and will significantly be impacted by the requirement to seek resource consent and cultural impact assessments for day-to-day farming activities. Some of these properties have been owned and farmed for five generations. From the perspective of these farming families, this land is their cultural landscape, and most have little relationship with those countries their forebears immigrated from. That's something that I heard on more than one occasion. So Federated Farmers do seek the overlays to be removed and applied much as they are in the Dunedin City 2GP. Alternatively, the overlays can be redrawn to be more refined with more precise rules. So in paragraph 21 there, sir, the Wahitapuna provisions do not operate in isolation. Other sections of the proposed plan seek to control many of the threats identified in Schedule 39.6 in relation to Wahitapuna areas. So I've set up some examples here of the relationship with other rules, but I won't step through those. You're probably very familiar with them. My point is the Wahitapuna rules are not independent to other performance standards in the plan. It is Federated Farmers members' views that I've learnt so far is that the objectives set out in Chapter 39 as notified are not the most appropriate way to achieve the purpose of the Act. The requirements on landowners are a disproportionate burden relative to the risk of those values for a lot of activities that are captured. Equally, other reasonably practical options for achieving these objectives, such as exclusions or thresholds, have not been applied against the rural context, in our view. And you know, you'll be familiar with the where the provisions, the overlay is on the website. They capture a lot of existing farming activities in Ben Lomond, Makarora, Wanaka, Hawea, for example, and they will create an ongoing need to seek resource consents. It is quite likely farmers will be applying for multiple resource consents every single year, and that is an administrative concern for our members. The submission by Federated Farmers included a list of land use activities that would likely trigger a resource consent, and the need to obtain a cultural impact assessment, including approval from Runaka. Many resource consents will be required for typical and expected activities in the rural zone, but I won't step through those. I'm sure you've read the submission, and these pretty much are a mirror of that. Practically speaking, for situations where an established farm seeks to construct... Oh, I won't even go there. I'll move to paragraph 29, sir. It is not unreasonable to acknowledge a farmer will be required to spend several thousand dollars on mana whenua approved consultants for many activities, some that are minor, such as the construction of a silage pit, installation of a water tank, water pump by a water course, things that are just part of day-to-day farming activities that many of which are totally obscured from anywhere in the public realm, and that's one of the deeper concerns. So I'll take you to paragraph 34, sir, if I could. That's the approach of the Dunedin City Council in their second generation district plan. That includes a Wahitapuna sublayer to capture key areas that make up the cultural landscape. It was noted that the entire Dunedin City formed part of that cultural landscape, but key areas were captured in that sublayer, and oddly that excluded the Otago Peninsula. In contrast to that approach, QLDC has a specific chapter with specific rules, and it's going to create a whole pile of new consents that will be a significant burden for different landowners. A discussion with DCC property staff Our policy staff clarified the method of managing effects of the Wahitapuna was a deliberate approach in the 2GP between DCC and Okaha staff. And my understanding is the intent of that was to reduce unnecessary bureaucracy. I do note that whilst the 2GP is still in its infancy, it does appear to work reasonably well. Having drafted numerous resource consent applications for within the Dunedin City, it appears that process does work well and has significant buy-in from landowners. So I just want to talk in paragraph 39 there about some of the points raised by Mr. Bathgate in his evidence. He stated that Runaka are concerned about whether accidental discovery protocols are being adhered to, with only one such notice being received. He considers that issue relates to plan implementation, and there may be room for improvement in guidance material or other education methods that sit outside the plan. I agree, there does remain scope to improve education material, and you know, everyone's on a path to improving themselves and understanding of the world. The key area I hear from landowners is the issue of trust in terms of a genuine partnership with mana whenua. The feedback I've had is it's one-sided and there's little benefit for a landowner to be proactive in that. I was interested in that formal point and I asked a number of landowners, including farmers from out of Otago and also lifestyle and residential property owners in Dunedin City that are within the Wahitapuna subzone. Their feedback was near unanimous that the issue did relate to trust and the economic effect on their development and timeliness of getting consents put through. That only came from those with an opinion. Many people were still quite oblivious to what the rules meant and what those consequences were. The feedback I had, that mirrored an experience I had where a landowner advised me that very day they excavated Koiwi while trenching, building a fence. And in response to that discovery, they elected to bury the Koiwi and carry on with their fencing. And when I challenged him, he advised me that the partnership with the Runaka lacked trust, even though they lived in an area that had quite a strong relationship with mana whenua there, and it simply wasn't in his interest to declare that discovery. Now, my view is if we get these rules right, it will go some way to actually improving that relationship and make it more of a two-way street, and that's the feedback I'm hearing for farmers. If I could take you to paragraph 44 there, sir. The practical implications of the mapped Wahitapuna areas will create an administrative and costly process to landowners and council. Conversely, Akaha and Te Omarama and the cultural experts writing the cultural impact assessments will enjoy a significantly increased workload. Farmers have asked me how much it will cost them to excavate a silage pit in their property and what does a cultural impact assessment cost. Now look, I don't know that, but it could easily be a couple of $1,000 for a cultural impact assessment for what is a day-to-day activity and would occur on an annualised basis one way or another for one type of consent or another. What is troublesome to Otago farmers is no economic evaluation has been carried out to determine the proposed framework is most appropriate to achieve the objectives of protecting the Wahitapuna cultural landscape. And in my opinion, the approach taken by the Dunedin City Council provides a structured approach that does consider land use whilst looking after the Wahitapuna values. Now, sir, I step through for the next few pages about a number of issues raised in the submissions in terms of setbacks, farm buildings and earthworks. I won't bore you with those. So I'll move to paragraph 58 if I can. So that is, farmers are practical people who respond to issues on a day-to-day basis, and things on a farm do change, and activities need to happen quickly to make a farm work. They simply do not have the luxury of several $1,000 for a consent, unspecified cost and time delays for a cultural impact assessment, and then a further 20 plus days for the resource consent to get processed. That just simply won't work in terms of a working farm environment. Now, one concern that has been raised by farmers is how the rule could potentially be applied differently. And they were concerned about how the Wahitapuna provisions would apply. And I've stepped that through in terms of a trade competition argument. And I want to make the point that the ability to participate as an affected party is quite different to the issue of trade competition. In paragraph 61 there, I talk about the same thing Mr. Giddens talked about in terms of what comprises that Mana Whenua are in the unique position to be the only party to understand the extent and the effects, and that party has the experience to make that assessment. So in terms of moving to paragraph 63, the submission by Federated Farmers set out some examples of and concerns about how trade competition could arise or how it could be perceived. And this concern has been raised to me by farmers in respect to both farming activities but also tourism activities in the rural sector. Now, farmers in the district do participate in tourism. It's a means of augmenting their income but also a mechanism to diversify their farm. And one submission that was referred to me related to Ngāi Tahu property seeking to convert 16,000 hectares of forestry into dairy at Balmoral in Huronui. Unlike most other dairy farm conversions in the Huronui, this was supported by Ngāi Tahu. The assessment of effects was light compared to other dairy farm applications, which were typically opposed by iwi. And the point I want to make here is the key point in the cultural impact assessment that was written by Jolly and Solomon confirmed Runaka supported that conversion to dairy simply on the basis it generated economic benefit to the iwi, and iwi have a right to economically benefit from the use of their land, and you know, I certainly appreciate that, but it created a dual prong approach to how the rules are applied. So I've considered how that could work, and in my view, revising the threat table in Schedule 39.6 to exclude subdivision, commercial or tourism activities would actually seek to address any potential perceived trade competition effects or similar, where there's an alternative approach applied for applications prepared by Mana Whenua. So look, sir, that pretty much wraps it up. I'm just going to say that the introductory paragraph for the in the 32 report states one of the broad issues is to ensure an effective an efficient resource management process. In my opinion, this approach in this chapter does not align with that statement. Overall, I generally support the approach and concerns raised by Mr. Farrell and Devlin. I'm not sure if you've heard them yet.
We have.
Their assessment was pretty solid, as was Mr. Giddens. I thought everything I've heard from farmers is very much aligned with what Mr. Giddens said. Federated Farmers members, they do support and recognise the cultural landscape, and they recognise it has an important role to play. The rules is, however, need to recognise that the existing landscape does contain many working farms that will be undoubtedly affected by the proposal. Just to sum up, that multiple consents every year is going to be significantly problematic for these farms. So that pretty much condenses those 16 pages there, sir.
Grateful for you doing that for our benefit, and I have some questions myself before I hand over to my colleagues. First relates to your paragraph 21. And the underlying question in my mind is, can we assume that the existing plan provisions capture Mana Whenua values, because they weren't written with that in mind?
No, look, it would require, and I think it was chapter 5, that would require some work, but look, each chapter, as Mr. Giddens set out, in terms of the rural resource area and things, can be refined to have the consenting process to include cultural effects as part of any restricted discretionary proposal. There's certainly scope to bring that in, and I think, for discretionary or non-compliant activities, they'll automatically be captured. So in my mind, there is certainly scope to have it, but there may need to be some revision in terms of some of those rules and how they're framed.
Second question I had relates to your paragraph 25. I realise that things happen on farms and can't be rather than a series of individual consents each year?
Look, I think if the plan goes through as it is now, I think that's where it would logically fall anyway, and farmers would be forced into doing that. And there is certainly a lot of logic in doing that. I certainly accept that.
And then can you save me the task of looking these ORC rules up? What is the status of each of these activities you've listed in paragraph 52?
They are all operative. It's only the...
No, I mean the planning status. So they're permitted, controlled, restricted.
Oh, okay, apologies for that. Look, off the top of my head, I'd say they're all restricted discretionary, and if you don't meet those performance standards, it would fall, it would cascade down further. But I did point out in my submission a number of activities which were permitted activities that do introduce some concerns, and other legislation that this will flow onto as well.
Thank you. Commissioner Chief.
I'm just, you gave us an example of a landowner, of an experience with a landowner who had excavated Koiwi. Is that, under which regime, was that a Dunedin City Council?
Yes, it was. It was on Otago Peninsula. I told him that I was going to alert the authorities, which I did. I told, at the time, it was Kaitau Ki Otago, and they acted on that.
I'm just trying to work out what you're illustrating here. If you're illustrating, I'm not sure that the example actually helps your case or the provisions we've got before us at the moment. So I'm just trying to work that out. You talked about trust and genuine partnership and trust with Mana Whenua in a two-way street. Where are the issues now as you see them? Are the issues sitting with Kārenaka that the problem is sitting with them, or...?
I think at the moment, I think a lot of the issues rely on people being uninformed about where things lie. There are a number of, I think a lot to do with people being uninformed about how the situation is, but there has been a couple of examples in Dunedin where there has been discoveries and it has put developments and people's activities on hold for quite a protracted time. And I suspect people want to continue on their activity without all of a sudden having to stop for 6 months or 2 months or whatever it is and carry out a robust analysis and assessment of what's going on there. So, just my feedback is, in terms of the trust, that's something I heard numerous times, that farmers just felt as a one-way street where they were given the rights and precluding the ability to do activities in the land and not getting a hell of a lot back in return. That condenses what I've heard from a number of farmers. Look, that wasn't really explained to me, to be honest. I guess an efficient and easy process would probably go a long way to what they're after.
So with the examples you've given, I imagine that Heritage New Zealand, Pōhiri Tāonga, would have a lot to do with the length of time, with delays and time efficiencies for accidental discovery.
Oh, absolutely. And look, my experience with Aokaha has been, they're relatively cost-efficient and reasonably timely. But I guess the concern is if you're going to need to get a resource consent and a cultural impact assessment and written approval from Runaka when you want to install a water pump in the watercourse for a month each year, or dig a silage pit, I think the concerns are just the ongoing need to seek resource consents and the regulatory issues associated with that. And Chairman raised the point about a global consent, and that actually does go a long way to addressing some of the concerns that my farmers probably would have. It doesn't address the fact that I still need to go through that process anyway. And, you know, a cultural impact assessment for all of farm could actually be quite an expensive process, which many of them probably don't want to spend money on.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Well, on your very final page, you see that some draft amended provisions that you or somebody has undertaken. So are these what you're suggesting to us as specific changes, if we were minded?
Oh, look, so my initial position is to delete Chapter 39. There are another couple of options available in there, but this relief that I've suggested here in these policies and objectives go some way to achieving what my farmers are trying to articulate to me, and I'm looking at the policy framework, and what I've suggested here goes some way to addressing them.
Just a couple of questions on that. I don't want to delve into too much of it. In your policy 39.3, it's not a change that you've made, and it's what the council has picked up. You recognise that certain activities, and you've got what do you understand those certain activities can be? And I'm sort of putting this at the frame of you and others are asking for greater specificity about how this would work, and I'm wondering whether the way that some of these policies are suggested actually take you or give you any more specificity, or in fact give a much greater level of non-specificity.
I guess the threat list in, is it Schedule 39.6, I think it is.
That's how you see that.
Yes, it is. Yes, and you know, if some of those if there was a cascade or multiple tiers of activities on that list, it might go some way to addressing that.
And in there, C, you've introduced this concept of residue effects, which is kind of, you know, always been seen in that offsetting mode. What do you, if you're not avoiding, remedying, or mitigating, what would be residue effects?
Well, look, that's a difficult one to consider, to be honest. I guess if a farmer wanted to install a silage pit somewhere that was going to be visible from the public realm, maybe they could do, you know, maybe they could do some alternative work elsewhere that is unrelated to that silage pit in consultation with what Mana Whenua want. It's a bit fluffy, I accept that, to be honest.
Somewhere else on the farm?
Yes, yes, otherwise you'd be mitigating the effects, you know, in terms of landscape planting or something.
And just to find out the policy 39217, where there are a number of mays and you recognise an application for an act that may adversely affect cultural value, may require a cultural impact assessment. Who is determining, I mean, the may, who decides whether it is or isn't?
Oh, look, well, that would have to be the processing planner, and that would be commensurate to the scale and effects of that proposed activity. And that's how the Dunedin City Council operates. And, you know, you can have activities going on in the Waihitapuni area that are considered to be negligible effects and go through permitted.
Sorry, how would that work in practice? So one of your farmers puts an application in, the reporting planner comes back and says, we think there are. Presumably, talk about consultation, and wouldn't the consultation determine that ahead of time? What I'm trying to look at is how clear is this, where it may be required and it may be required?
I assume that Queenstown Lakes has a relationship with Mana Whenua here and presents resource consent applications to them to say, these are what we've got coming in this week. Do you have any interest in these consents? And that might be an opportunity there for the iwi to say, we do have an interest in this one here, and bring it into the mix at that stage.
Thank you. So just to be clear, the mays, and you're saying that's a role that the council should be determining.
Well, in conjunction with Mana Whenua, yes.
Thank you very much.
While we're on that page, I was interested in the suggested amendment to policy 39212. I can understand that you might have an issue with, like, the true inclusory Would it assist if that policy were more focused on building structures and indeed other activities within close proximity to wood bodies in terms of providing greater specificity?
Well, it would, but the Targa Regional Council has a rule in terms of any structures within 7 metres of a water body now. So that would capture that to some degree.
Thank you. Mr. Dawson.
I wonder, have you looked at or are you aware of the amended version of the chapter that Ms. Pickard gave to us when she appeared at our hearing last week?
No, I'm not, sorry.
I just wondered if you had, because some of the examples that you've given us are ones that, between following from Mr. Bathgate's evidence, Mr. Pickard's picked up some of the suggestions in his evidence and have actually made quite substantial amendments to say that his works provisions, the farm buildings provisions, further restricting where they apply. For example, the earthworks provisions now, apart from in some specific areas, would only apply above 400 metres above sea level. And the buildings in close proximity to other buildings or a replacement for an existing building, which she says within 30 metres of existing buildings, again, would be excluded. So I just wanted to draw that to your attention. And
look,
it does sort of, I mean, the intention was to try and address some of those day-to-day activities that occur on farms and not have them be caught unnecessarily.
And look, that's appreciated. In the main, Mr. Bathgate's evidence was rock solid. I thought it was pretty bang on. I liked most of it. And it was well articulated. So, you know, I certainly support the bulk of what Mr. Bathgate said. So if that's carried into the plan, that would go some way to alleviating some of our concerns. But it is the isolated activities such as a pump shed that goes into a water on the margin of a water body for a month, you know, to address something that's happening immediately, or a silage pit and things like that. The other things that don't have those relationships with other structures that do concern me. In terms of structures above 400 metres ASL, I totally support Mr. Bathgate's evidence on that.
Thank you
very much. Questions, please?
Thank you. Thank you for your evidence. I just wanted to touch on your paragraphs 59, 60, 61, 60. You will have heard me earlier today exploring those issues with a number of parties, just around whether mana whenua values are only able to be represented or understood by those parties. You refer to that as trade competition, and I just wonder whether do you feel that's the correct sort of way to refer to that issue, or whether it might be something else?
It was a difficult one to try and fit into a definition, and to me trade competition comes up in the right place. You know, you could have a landowner who wants to carry out a canyoning activity on their property or on some lins or dock land within their property. They apply for the resource consent, it doesn't get the cultural impact assessment, it's got a negative recommendation, goes to a limited notified hearing, mana whenua oppose it, the consent could well be declined. Farmers are concerned, well, at least one I've spoken to is concerned that may open up the ability for mana whenua to open up another tourism venture that's very similar in the same location, but they've closed the door on the landowner to allow them to do it in the future. So in terms, it does have a trade competition feel about it.
So you're referring specifically where mana whenua have interests in commercial activities on adjoining land or similar, as opposed to the procedural issues around trade?
Yes, and I guess it's, you know, no, a consent hearing panel can't be aware about what Mana Whenua's future intentions are on an activity, and they do have the ability to input evidence into the process that can result in the consent being declined. And as Mr. Gibbons alluded, you know, in well, roundabout terms, in my view, if you had Mana Whenua providing cultural evidence and you had someone else providing contrary cultural evidence when it comes to the panel doing their weighing exercise, Mana Whenua's evidence is almost always going to override the non. And look, that's probably right, but that's what does happen in real life in my experiences.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sycamore, for coming to talk to us. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
That's about all I have on my list.
I just had to get my hearing aids fixed, and I was in a problem because I thought it was 2 o'clock, and I got called in at 11. So luckily there was no cops, and I didn't get a ticket.
we're all agreed, but pleased to see you.
No, thank you for accommodating me. I would like to. I'm representing the Kinloch Township. I would like to start by saying that I have more heritage in Queenstown than any other single person here, and I'll state that by saying that my ancestors settled and colonised Kinloch in the late 1850s and early 1860s, and there'd been no evidence at all of any human activity there whatsoever. Why would you? Because it was only a swamp, sandfly infested swamp and high bush and cold and dark and wet. So just letting you know where I come from, and seven of our family still own and actively live in the township of Kinloch that was named by my ancestors. So I have a very, very long relationship with Kinloch. Now I'm going to move on to a place where my pay packet's not good enough, but yours is, onto the Resource Management Act. And I believe that the Resource Management Act states that it has to have, anything has to have proper consultation, rigorous and proper consultation on things to be passed through. Now the all the evidence I've got, and from the lack of communication from everybody involved, the consultation of the map that has been drawn up is really negligent. I cannot find any minutes of any meetings that have been held that actually can scrutinise. The meeting they had in the St. Margaret's Church back in, I think it was November, I haven't got the dates here because I was in a hurry and I missed some of them, left them at home. It was a sort of a get-together thing saying that this was sort of going to happen, and no minutes was taken, and the council had said that Plan 1 and 2 had already been decided on, and if you weren't part of Plan 1 and 2, you could not be active in Part 3. Then was, and that put a lot of people out, and we got no application, nothing from the council stating that that meeting was actually on. And, all due thing to St. Margaret's Church, it's really not a place for a hearing on the robustness of the consultation that should have taken place. I then went to went to the meeting that they had in the Frankton Library. Short notice, I think it was only 2 or 3 days we were given this notice. We were given 1 hour in which we were to go in there and talked about the consultation of the map, and there was five people up in front of us, and went on there, and the map was shown there, and up it come, and there was a question asked, holy hell, do you want to take the whole of the South Island over? And Edward Allison says, yep, that's our plan. And so I immediately says, and excuse my language, I said, you guys are really pissing me off because not one single person of you here are taking any minutes or notes down of what we're saying. So you're actually treating us with disdain. So in saying that, I would like to see any evidence from anybody anywhere where the Resource Management Act statutory laws, you guys know more about than I do, where it is actually written down, where the public consultation was followed with rigour and process that it should have been done by. Excuse me. Now that's the. Now I'll just move on a wee bit further. I really am totally offended of how this whole system has been put together, especially the map, because there seems to be just drawn a line. We have no evidence of anybody putting their name down to where they put that line, because there's been no consultation. We don't know who did it, how did it come by. And a wee bit further, we the official information request that we asked for the word significance and areas of significance related to the word significance in the Waipuna thing come out as authenticity and verification. Now, those two words should be written down somewhere in the consultation process, which was not taken up. Now, the authenticity, awareness, unbiased processing, and relational orientation. Where in the Resource Management Act consultation of that map did those three things appear and have not been written down and have not been negotiated? Verification. Verification is accuracy, truth, corrections. Was there any consultation done? Was there any? That's the question that's got to be asked. The line of the map was put down by somebody who has not put their name to it, and everybody is going along with what is there and what should be done. We need evidential evidence of this that would actually stand up in a court of law, not emotionalised emotionalism that is trying to be getting through on that. So we don't want non-physical. We want to comply with what the Resource Management Act states. And as I said, you guys have forgotten more about that than I'll ever know. I see this as a partnership, not as a separation, but I do ask the question, are Ngāi Tahu above the law? Really, looking at the Resource Management Act, they really are above the law, because 160 years of my association with the Queenstown area and a stroke of the pen has been negated, and now if I want to do anything with my bit of land, I've got to ask somebody else if I can do it, which I've been able to do for the last 160 years, if I can do it, and for the privilege of that, I end up paying people money that have actually got no historical evidence that they were actually in the area at all. So the that is my major thing there, is the Resource Management Act has not been followed, and I presume I have not read it. The Treaty of Waitangi is involved in that there, and the consultation was not done. How legal was that map? Who drew the map in? Who actually signed it off it was legal? Who allowed the council to say, sorry, one and two chapters are already decided on, so you cannot come along and consult with us on chapter three. So it is really, comes down to the law. Why are Ngāi Tahu above the law, and where is my heritage is just totally wiped out with a stroke of the pen? That'll do. Kinloch Township.
A map of Kinloch, and ask you to show us exactly where your land is.
Right. The land is right on the edge of the lake. It was actually it is fully surveyed off, and my section that I have is Block 8, which is the last section heading down towards the Greenstone Road, the Greenstone Station. Is that Greenstone? What's that street called, Bill? It's a Greenstone Kinloch Road, probably. It's just by the wharf, not far from the wharf there. And my ancestors and ourselves have owned that bit of land for 160 years. And here I've got to ask somebody else if I could shift 10 square metres of dirt and pay for the privilege of doing it. So do you want me to... It's further... It's right at the edge of the lake. It's not a very good map, that, is it?
Can you pull it out, please, Kat?
You should be able to have a map of Kinloch on that. Pretty simple, shouldn't it?
Yeah,
It is... You have Glenorchy on one side of the lake. If you stand on the wharf of Glenorchy, look straight across the... Oh, just go for a wee bit more. I have forgotten a couple of things. The...
Just keep that thought.
Yeah, so there we go. Just up a bit. Right at the edge of the lake. Down a bit to the left. There. Across the hill. Yeah. See that orange bit there? Or the yellow bit?
Yep.
There. Yeah, right where it is about there. That's where I am.
You think you're in the yellow bit?
I'm in the yellow bit.
Mr. Bright, can we tell you that if you're in the yellow bit, one of the things we've been discussing, both with, we heard from the council officers last week, was that the council officer is now recommending that the rules in Chapter 39 do not apply in urban zones, and the settlement zone, which is the yellow bit,
yep,
is an urban zone for this purpose.
Yep.
So the council are recommending to us that the rules would not apply to the land within Kinloch Township.
Sir, can I butt in there? That is really quite a joke. Why were we not notified from the council? Why were the landowners not notified from the council that they had changed the rules 2 weeks prior to this hearing? It is a joke. So I'll go with, but can I just go back to the definition of significance? And I would like to see the words area put in the form of a definition. Now, the area of significance. Now, you have areas of expertise in the law. I have areas of expertise in farming. Other people have areas of expertise in other things. So when you get the word area of significance, it has actually got no definition whatsoever to what it actually means. So if it went through a court of law or anything like that, who has the right interpretation of that area of significance? Is it a myth or a nice thing? You know, I could, it's got to be determined in the appendix as a definition, stated exactly what it is. So I'll go back to that there. That is typical of what we have had to put up with that map being just drawn around there, and then all of a sudden, hello, my submission on this thing is just about irrelevant because the council a fortnight ago told me it was irrelevant. It's crazy.
I'm not sure it's irrelevant. I think the message might be that your submission has worked because the rules no longer apply to your land.
So therefore my submission is null and void.
It's been successful.
Just another. I'll finish now. My heritage also is the one of the oldest buildings, wooden building in the country, is still there. Was used, built by my grandfather, who was the first police officer in the. It's built in 1872 and still being used as a lodge. So when you talk about heritage and things of significance, that lodge up there at Kinloch is still there in significance as well. But I am absolutely, totally dumbfounded that we were not giving any information saying that that had been accepted and taken out. That is just beyond comprehension. It really is. That just who did draw that map up and who did sign it off and where was it? Yeah, no, sorry, I'm getting growly. Don't wind me up anymore, please.
We won't wind you up. Hey, thank you very much for coming to see us. Well, we appreciate you turning down the road. I'm glad the constabulary didn't.
And I got a bit of spleen off, a bit of stuff off my spleen, didn't I?
Good for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Last person I have on my list is Al Angus.
That's me.
Sorry, sir. I've been looking at you. Yeah.
I've been called a lot worse names than what you were thrown over. Don't worry about it.
Glad to hear, and as for Mr. Bryant, and grateful for you moving around to accommodate us.
That's right. I've sort of got to hurry off, actually. Anyway, so I'll get through it quite quick. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Yep. Right. So, first of all, I'd just like to thank everybody, Neville, and anybody that has come along and submitted against this proposal for their courage, as a matter of fact. You know, I'm quite sure they've been marked down for future reference, having dealt with Ngāi Tahu over the years myself. Anyway, so I'll just read out my statement here, basically. I'm a layman, I'm a mechanic, probably responsible for the biggest and most consistent population of Maori at the head of the lake for the last 50 years or so, as a matter of fact. But anyway, and this is probably the only thing all of us have ever agreed on. This whole thing should be thrown out. So that's what my submission was. So while QLDC and Ngāi Tahu have been working on this behind the scenes for around 6 years, we were informed, this is harking to the consultation thing, at a very late notice, by an underwhelming process of one unmarked letter. The public notification of this has been, I'd say, deliberately low-key, and in fact, I met people, not yesterday, on Tuesday, that are in the map that had no idea they were even in the map yet, you know, so it just never got out. So Corporate Ngāi Tahu have drawn an overlay map of much of the Lakes District, where there is only a few actual recognised cultural sites, and probably myself and Neville know where three of them are, the general public doesn't. They have drawn such an all-encompassing map because they claim to have secret underlying map. We were told about that at the St Margaret's thing. I question Ngāi Tahu at length about this map at the subsequent meeting we had at Glenorchy, and you know, after sort of a reasonable, vigorous back and forth. Mr. Allison admitted there is not actually a physical underlying map, but a mental map held by a few elite Ngāi Tahu who have created it after 30 years of studying secret things. That was, you know, virtually word for word, you know, and frankly, I just find that piffle. I don't believe this is about culture, but more about cash, and I'm going to dwell on that somewhat. You know, the potential is to harvest millions annually. The hourly rates we were given is irrelevant, as there is no limit to how many hours they can charge or how long it may take to issue their permit. The potential for abuse is obvious. This guy that was here before was, mentioning it quietly, but however, you know, I'm not shy. This also gives Ngāi Tahu immense power over the council, as they can effectively cut off the flow of consent just by holding them up. And the other thing that I have been involved with as a property on the west coast is koha. And for those who don't know the term, it has been described in our local newspaper as state-sanctioned extortion. And koha is a non-receipted cash gift. I questioned Ngāi Tahu at length if this would be expected and accepted in this process, and they refused to rule it out. My experience on the coast, it was a $20,000 koha that was expected and wasn't paid, as a matter of fact. The other thing is both QLDC and DOC pay Ngāi Tahu koha. Land evaluation. Having all consents subject to corporate Ngāi Tahu approval stamped on our titles will have a substantial impact on our property values. A couple of land agents I've spoken to have suggested a fall of up to 50% either way, but even a fall of 10% in some cases will be hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's bad enough that our rights as landowners have been consistently eroded over the years by both central and local government without Ngāi Tahu smothering what's left. There is nothing preventing more of these parallel consent processes being forced upon us if, for instance, the Southern and Otago Iwis fall out or the West Coast decide to try their luck. You know, there can be another one and another one and another one. Where does it damn well end? My consent was throw the whole thing out, and I stand by that. There must not be any landowners left in the map, or this will set a national precedent and also provide a launching pad for the next attack. Regarding Ngāi Tahu's claim for environmental stewardship, at Kinloch we have been fighting for many years to stop their boats destroying the banks and wildlife of the Dart River, with no success. In fact, each attempt we made was met with increased destruction. You know, this is documented and filmed, and the whole thing's, you know, I'm not just making it up on the spot, which I could have easily. The deliberate and devastating effect of their boats took out the entire Kinloch wetland reserve. They weren't even supposed to be in there, and the Woodbine's highest yielding hay paddock. You know, again, they weren't supposed to be in there, but they thought, as Mr. Bryant said, they're a law unto themselves up there, and I think, you know, rightfully believing that they've been above the law has given them the courage to start, you know, forming them. And I also see your urban thing where they've proposed to take me out. I'm on that map there with Neville. But that's only a proposal, and it can be withdrawn before I get to the door. You know, there's nothing set there. And frankly, I find it profoundly arrogant that the QLDC and corporate Ngāi Tahu are proposing to generously give back some of the rights we still presently retain, as the Act has not come into law yet. Therefore, they are trying to get gratitude for something they've yet to steal. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Agus. Just don't worry.
Oh, I have some questions with you.
No, I've got a meeting,
okay,
with a guy that's we're trying to form a alcohol and drug rehab site in Queenstown, so it's a little bit more important than that. Yeah.
Grateful for you stopping, and go well.
See ya.
Really good.
I think that was it. Sir, you...
No, no.
expected. I'm worried.
I just wondered, what are you going to say?
I'm saying we're over for the day. We'll adjourn and restart 9 a.m. in Wanaka.